Welcome, podcast listeners. Today, I have what could be the greatest interview of this little show's life. His name, Jonathan Decker. Probably, potentially, you've never heard of him, but he is the clinical director of Your Family Expert. He is a licensed marriage and family therapist, a husband, and maybe perhaps most impressively, a father of five. Jonathan has his master's degree in family therapy from Auburn University. He has his bachelor's degree from that cool school in Utah, Brigham Young University. He, by his own admission, is a genius billionaire playboy. He has done stage comedy. He is passionate.
And philanthropist.
Yeah,
right?
And philanthropist. I forgot. Hey, this is my introduction, Jonathan, so let me finish.
I apologize.
This is my part. This is where I get a shine for once in my show. He's passionate about interfaith efforts to strengthen families and communities. But, okay, he's got five kids. He's a husband to a beautiful wife. He's got degrees. He's done stage comedy. Easily his greatest accomplishment in life is that he won the BYU talent show for his one-man act based on Lord of the Rings. Welcome.
That's right.
Welcome to the show, Jonathan. And you got to unpack the talent show thing because that could be nerdy, but maybe it was cool.
Okay, well, first of all, you have shined, brother. You are sparkly over there. You're like Edward Cullen. Like, this is straight up sparkles. I'm digging it. The talent show thing. So Michael asked me for interesting things because I told him about my pedigree, and he's like, boring. So I started to feed him some lies. But this one was true. No, they were all true. I was in the Brigham Young University talent show, and I thought I was just comedic filler. I mean, there are people in there who did ballroom dance. They practiced for years. There was a guy who juggled on a 6-foot unicycle. I mean, there are people with legitimate talent that had taken years and years to develop. I spent a weekend looking in the mirror doing Gollum and Smeagol and different voices from Lord of the Rings. I will give you a sample, but I go out on stage, and I'd never done stage comedy before. I was nervous, and it went very, very well. And then I won, and I don't think I should have won. I don't think I was the most talented person, but I won the crowd. And how I won the crowd was with stuff like this. We want it. We need it. Must have the precious. They stole it from us. This is the inheritance. No, not Master. Yes, precious Master. He will hurt you, lie to you. Master's my friend. You don't have any friends. Nobody likes you. Got him. So,
oh my
god, there's a little bit of taste.
You took me right back to Lord of the Rings. Dude, that was actually very impressive. Did you actually do Smeagol for the hit?
Oh, yeah. Like I got on the chair. If you go to YouTube and look for One Man Lord of the Rings BYU talent show, you'll see it. And this is me years out of practice right now. Like, if you thought that was good, you need to see the actual moment.
That is crazy.
But I do a lot of different voices. Do you have any voices? I'm taking requests from you, Michael. What do you want to hear?
All right. You mentioned this one, and I'm kind of excited because I haven't heard a good impression of Pee Wee Herman in a while.
Okay, hang on. Quick sip of water. All right. I have to sit back from my phone here so it's not too loud.
Good morning, Pee Wee. Good morning, Mr. Pretzel. Can I have some Mr. T cereal, please? Okay.
There you go. There's Pee Wee Herman.
All right. Wait. I'm going to do something really messed up for my audience right now. I want you, because I have a cool question here, but I just had a way better idea on how to get the answer out of you. So, So you're helping families now. You're running yourfamilyexpert.com. That's a brilliant URL, by the way.
Yes. My wife is actually the CEO, and I'm the clinical director. And we do therapy and relationship coaching across the country and online courses. So I've gone from, but we still have to make it fun.
Well, I mean, life isn't worth living if it's not enjoyable.
Yeah, well, maybe. Absolutely. So what's maybe, your question?
Maybe and that's overstated.
And so, in what perverse way am I going to answer it?
Yeah, yeah. So what is like your go-to favorite advice for couples, right? So start thinking about sort of that one nugget that you have found a lot of success in helping couples and helping their relationship, but I need you to give it as Smeagol. I want relationship advice from Smeagol. Can you handle that?
Okay. Let's see. Okay. So Gollum's the angry one and Smeagol's the sweet one. So this is actually perfect.
Yeah. We want the sweet one.
All right. We want love. We want closeness. We want intimacy, but we can never get it. Sorry. We think that fighting less is the key. We must fight less, but we need more connection. Happy couples and miserable couples, they fight just as much as each other. But couples who are happy, they show more love and connection, more interest in one another's interests. Yes, precious, interests. Can I keep going with this thread but switch over to maybe Kip from Napoleon Dynamite?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Give me some Kip from Napoleon Dynamite.
Okay.
Giving marriage advice.
Your wife, she's the best thing that has ever happened to you. Don't worry. I'm sure there's a gorgeous babe out there for you somewhere. And when you find her, you just gotta make sure that you listen to her, you know? And that you're spending time, not just in your own head and training for cage fights all day, but I don't know. I'm having a hard time thinking of good advice because I'm too focused on the voices. So there you go. I'll pepper some other impressions throughout this interview.
All right. I'm going to call on them from time to time, Jonathan. So what?
Do an audible.
So as Jonathan Decker, what did Smeagol from Lord of the Rings and Kip from Napoleon Dynamite, what do they just teach couples?
I think that the biggest key is we have, as couples and as families, a lot of times we think that we need to fight less. There's too much contention. There's too much arguing. There's too much ugliness. But really, fighting is just a symptom. I mean, happy families, happy couples have fights and arguments. The difference is that in a happy marriage, a couple's going to fight, and then they're going to withdraw. And they're going to stay away from each other and stay in their corners. So all that negative energy just stews there. Whereas, did I say happy? I meant unhappy. With a happy couple, on the other hand, they might fight and argue. It's not going to get as ugly. It's not going to get as mean. But they still have fights and arguments. But in between, they're nurturing that relationship. In between, they're praising. They're expressing gratitude. They're spending time with each other. In between, they're showing affection physically. In between, they're building one another up and lightening each other's load. And so that, to me, is like speed. It's like shock absorbers on a bike. When I was a kid, my parents, they had money, but they were cheap. And so all my friends had these high quality mountain bikes with shock absorbers in the front. I shouldn't say they were cheap. There were five of us. They spread it around. I'm sorry, Dad, if you're listening. But my friends had mountain bikes that had shock absorbers in the front. And I had a bike with no shock absorbers. And my friends could hit a curb at 20 miles an hour and keep pedaling and, you know, just bounce because the shock absorbers would just take it. But I hit a curb and, you know, I just go head over handlebars. And I think in our marriages and families, it's a very similar thing. The more we praise and express gratitude and show affection and genuine concern and quality time and fun time together, really enjoying each other, then those curves are going to come. Those speed bumps are going to come, but we handle them a lot better. And so a lot of people think they need to fight less, but what they really need is, how much love am I showing today? How much genuine interest am I putting down my phone and engaging and connecting? And that'll help us handle the bumps. So that's what Kip and Smeagol were trying to say.
Well, and let me ask you this then.
But sometimes, so, you know, Kip just gets distracted because Napoleon wants some lip balm because his lips hurt real bad. Gosh.
So let's get practical here. So then why? What happens in your view or your understanding? Why is a couple, because like we get it, right? Hey, if I was more affirming, if we were more positive, if we were more soft touches and being kind to one another and all these good things, what in the world prevents people from doing that?
I think we get proud if we feel that we've been wronged or our feelings have been hurt, or even, heaven forbid, if the other person makes a valid point and their criticism of us is valid. We don't want to give it to them. And so we get defensive, or we shut down, and then we're not accountable. And when we get defensive, we want to tear the other person down because we feel attacked. And so how to counter that, I think, is honestly, it's just really old-fashioned values of, are you responsible? Are you accountable? If someone says something to you and it's hurtful or it's mean, but you see that there's a kernel of truth in it, or maybe it feels hurtful because you know it's true, can you own that? Even if you don't like how they're talking to you, even if you think it's exaggerated or twisted, is there something there that you can take ownership of and be humble and accountable? Because if you can do that, then it's easier to ask the other person to follow suit. Whereas if we're both casting blame, then nobody wants to take acceptance. Nobody wants to be accountable, and then it just gets ugly and it just snowballs. And so I honestly think it comes down to, am I humble? Am I accountable? Am I forgiving? And if I can do that, then my marriage, my family can be strong. It can survive.
I love that.
And thrive.
I am talking with Jonathan Decker. He is a part of yourfamilyexpert.com, that his wife is the CEO. And what is your wife's name? I'm so sorry.
That's correct.
I should have that.
No, that's okay. Her name is Alicia.
Alicia.
She's the CEO. Yep, and I'm the clinical director. So I train the team and make sure the clients are happy, and she runs the business.
Well, and let me just ask quickly, how can folks get helped with you guys and with your organization?
Well, so we're run out of the state of Utah, and so we provide online and face-to-face therapy in Utah and in a handful of other states that allow for interstate therapy. But we have a relationship coach who does relationship coaching across state lines, and then we do online courses. And wherever you are, we have these courses that you can log in. If you're having fun with us tonight, having fun, you know, you think I'm moderately entertaining, I make these courses fun. It's edutainment.
Oh, nice.
But we do these relationship courses on marriage and parenting and blended families and healthy sexuality and dating and grief and emotional health and all these things. And so wherever you are, you can take an online course. And so for some people who may not ever wander into a therapist's office, they might feel a lot more comfortable sitting at home with their sweetheart, popping the popcorn and learning some things. And then the coursework, there's work to do. You don't just sit and learn. But that's what your relationship coach is for, or you can do it on your own. So that's what we offer all across the country, all around the world.
Yeah, I'm looking at yourfamilyexpert.com, and you guys, there are four core courses, Relationship Foundations, Fight Less, Connect More. That seems to be part of a free trial. Then you got your four personalities, Love Languages, and Family Counsels. And then once you kind of get going, there's a bunch more stuff. If you're a step family, they're going to help you in that area. If you're trying to heal from infidelity, if you're trying to deal with a divorce, right? So sometimes it doesn't
work
out. They've got some great courses.
And we're adding new courses every month. And a note on the love languages, it's based on Gary Chapman's 5 love languages. And we actually reached out to their camp and said, we'd like to do our own course based on that, taking the basic principles. But we have our own spin on it. And so I just wanted to make sure people listening not saying like, hey, he didn't come up with the 5 love languages. That's correct. We got their permission.
Hey, don't get excited. Don't get too excited about yourself.
Yeah, I don't.
Well,
my father's an attorney, so I feel like I have to throw that in there.
Well, give me if someone tried to sue you over that, you know, love languages thing, right? If someone was obnoxious enough to do that, and it feels like in today's culture that's possible, what would Chewbacca say to that person?
Chewbacca would say, which, of course, is Wookiee for get a life.
Yeah. And you know, okay, so when you and I were kind of talking and I'm giving you an idea of what these podcasts are like, and you're probably sitting there terrified going, how is this going to actually happen? And since we'd already had one failed start a week ago, one of the comments you made, and I put it here in quotes in my notes, is that our country is like a dysfunctional family. What are your thoughts on that? Because I have some pretty, like, I don't ever get political, so this isn't going to turn into a political show or a political whatever statement, but it almost felt like maybe you and I are more similar in this idea than we are apart. But I'm kind of curious, like, what do you mean by that, that our country seems to be behaving in this like a dysfunctional family?
You know, as I scour social media and as I visit the comments threads on almost any topic, but especially politics, and as I watch, as I tune in here and there to the talk shows that are doing these points back and forth, and I see both sides tending to vilify one another and paint each other in broad strokes. I mean, and I just see our country being very divided across ideologies, across belief systems, across political systems, and there's very, very much an us versus them. And it resembles a giant family feud. You know, people aren't truly listening, or they're listening just long enough to refute and tell someone why they're wrong. They're seeing anyone who disagrees with them as someone worthy of insults and slapping a simplified label on them, like, you know, like idiot or moron or jerk or crazy. And things just escalate. And we all dig our heels in, and we're all exceptionally arrogant in that we think our way is the right way. You know, and a quick tangent, you don't need to look any further than while you're driving to see that everybody thinks their way is the correct way. Because if anyone who's going faster than you, Michael, is a what?
A jerk.
Keep it clean. Anyone going slower than you is a what?
Loser.
Right? But the next day, you might be zoned out to a song you're listening to, and you're the one holding up traffic because you're driving slow.
Yeah,
or you might be late for an appointment, so you're... Yeah, and you might be zipping through traffic, you know, late for something, and so we all drive thinking, why can't everybody drive the way that I am driving or the way that I want it to drive? And we're the same way in our family relationships. We all think, oh no, I don't think I'm always right, and of course I can learn from other people. But when the rubber meets the road, we say things like, you know, if you were smart, you would do this, and it happens to be the way that I would do it.
Yeah,
if you were kind, you would say this, which happens to be what I would say. You know, if you were sane, this is what you would think, and it happens to be what I think. And we all do that. And so I look at our country, and honestly, the exact same principles that heal families and that heal marriages could heal our country if we would let it. So I'm going to take this as an opportunity to formally announce my presidential run on the Marriage Family Therapy platform.
You have to give me a 10-second campaign speech as Pee Wee Herman. What would be your platform?
Well, I already did Pee Wee, didn't I? Let's pick somebody else. How about I do it as
Sean Connery?
Oh, Sean Connery. All right. All right. Well,
platform.
Listen here. Most things in here don't react too well to bullets. That's why I have Secret Service, and that's why I have Michael Schmalley as my running mate to be my human shield. There you go. There's Sean Connery.
That is perfect. Well, and you know, you've mentioned pride.
I can't love people in slices.
Yeah.
What's that?
You love... Oh my gosh, I almost just said what you said. You've mentioned already several times this idea of pride, that it seems to many of the dysfunctions that our country is engaged in, as well as obviously our marriages, our families, it breaks down at pride. What, you know, where do you get that idea that pride is sort of one of those foundational dysfunctional things?
Well, you know, the old saying, pride cometh before the fall.
That's a saying.
And no matter who is campaigning on what side of the aisle their campaign is America is not what it used to be. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, both Trump and Hillary, you know, had a similar, I mean, they went in different directions with it, but they were both looking at it like that. And I think, so where do I think that pride is? Look at us. At various times in our history, we've been more united than we are now. Now, granted, there's always been racial strife. There's been strife on religious grounds. There's been strife on sexuality grounds. There's been strife, but there have been times when the country was a lot more united and there was a lot less vitriol than there was now. And I think of how does a happy couple or family get to a place where they can't stand each other? And it comes from pride. Am I willing to, if I'm in my marriage, I might have a position, but if my wife makes a point, am I humble enough to look at it honestly and to honestly consider it and not to just out of hand dismiss it and say, but actually look at it and say, you know what, I'm open to having my mind changed. I'm open to having my heart changed. And I think far too often we just assume that right or left, Republican or Democrat, that whatever side we're on has the market cornered on what is right. Or we might, we might be more level-headed and say, well, you know, my party's not perfect, but the other party's just a disaster full of idiots and evil people.
Well, but that's what it is right now. I recently got into a conversation with one of my children, and I've got, my kids are much older than your kids. And so they're getting caught up. And I mean, it's highly politicized right now. But one of the things I warned my oldest was, hey man, regardless of who you want to be in power or who you wish would have won, if you treat that opposite candidate, the one that you didn't want, if culturally, if you guys continue to treat someone with extreme disrespect and being dishonoring towards them, man, first is breaking Jesus Christ, do unto others as you wish they would do unto you, right? That golden rule idea is that what's scary for me is it gets so contentious that my warning to him was, bro, be careful, man, because just know how you guys are treating the president now is more than likely how the opposite side will treat your winning candidate.
Right.
And you better think about that, because as ineffective as you're trying to make someone's policies, that'll come full circle, right? And we need to learn as a society, but also obviously as a family, as a husband, as a wife, I need to learn, how do I want to be treated? And why don't I grab the initiative and do that for my wife or do that for my kids? Or, hey, society, how do you want to be treated? Well, if you want to be loved and respected and cherished and valued and honored, well, then unfortunately, you got to do that for the other person.
You have to. And I'm glad you brought up the Savior. I mean, the fact is, the greatest guidebook for society and for a family is the Sermon on the Mount, period. And so I look at that and I think, you know, by all means, I'm not suggesting people can't hold to political beliefs and ideals or religious beliefs and ideals and say, to me, this is true. I believe this is true and it's important and I'm going to fight for it. But whoever lives by the sword dies by the sword. At what point does fighting for something become the mission instead of loving people?
Yeah, and that's what it is right now.
You look at Jesus, and you look at the command to love your enemies, and your enemies isn't a classic superhero bad guy versus evil guy once bent on world domination. Like, your enemy is the person who is hurtful towards you, the person who is mean to you, or even the person that you oppose. That you're on opposite sides of an issue. That the first commandment is to love God. Second commandment is to love your neighbor as yourself. And loving your enemy means I'm going to take the time to find out what is good about this person. And, you know, you look at the scribes and the Pharisees criticizing him for dining with sinners and for hanging out with prostitutes and tax collectors. But he looked at every single one of those people, and he didn't see the sinner first. He saw the person first. And I'm not trying to say that people who disagree with me politically or otherwise are sinners. What I'm trying to say is we tend to vilify people, and that is not the way to peace.
No.
And I think one of the best things you could ever do is to be genuinely friends with someone that you disagree with and see what you can learn from, and to not be afraid to. But, you know, by all means, if you have something you believe is true, hold to it and don't budge from it. But there, you'd be surprised what things you think you hold to as absolute truth that somebody else has another perspective and another experience, and either your perspective shifts or at least you see them with more compassion and understanding. And that's true in families, and that's true in the country.
Yeah, it really is true. And you know, it also rings true in marriage and relationships that, you know, people are desperate to turn their relationship around. And what they fail to recognize is, well, maybe, you know, maybe if you did it differently, or maybe if you stopped waiting for your spouse to do the right thing, or your kid to do the right thing, or that other person. I consistently encourage people that, hey, you're never going to lose by doing the right thing. Right. And
it's, yeah,
I might not see the treasure here, but I'm going to get that treasure in eternity. Well, I am talking with Jonathan Decker. He is the clinical director of yourfamilyexpert.com. And I encourage you guys to check out his website. He's got a lot of different ways to be able to help you with powerful online courses, video and phone. Well, I don't know about phone, but I know you do video coaching. And then even some clinical counseling in states that you're also licensed to do that in.
That's correct. There's a yourfamilyexpert.com/contact. You can reach out to me. And even if you just want a 15-minute consultation free just to pick someone's brain, or, you know, we're here to help.
Excellent. Well, one of the,
you know,
yes.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Nope, you got it.
Oh, before you go in a different direction, you brought up something that I thought was really interesting, which is this idea of looking at ourselves first. You know, kind of the beam in the eye versus the mote in the eye.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so often it's like, well, I'm not going to change because I don't want my partner to think that they're vindicated, that I was the problem. You know, they think that I'm the problem, and if I start working and making changes, then they're going to think they were right. And you said something that I thought was so profound, Michael, which is we never lose by doing right. You never lose by doing what you know is right, by making changes, by being humble and accountable. And when we look at ourselves first, it usually takes the heat off the other spouse, and they're willing to, or the other, you know, family member, and it makes them more willing to do the same. I ask this question a lot of people, especially of couples. That thing you want your partner to change, how are you contributing to it? You know?
Yeah.
I may want my spouse to be honest with me. Maybe they have a history of not telling me the truth or hiding things. But if I look at myself, when they confess things to me that they're embarrassed about or ashamed of, I get angry and I shame them. Or when I ask their opinion and they give me their honest opinion, I say, well, that's stupid. You know? So I'm making it hard for them to be honest. Or maybe I want my wife to be more intimate physically, but I'm detached during the day. I'm not texting her to tell her I miss her. I'm not doing housework. I'm not helping with kids. I'm just working and watching TV.
Yeah, not engaged emotionally or in a meaningful way to your wife.
She's exhausted. She's worn out and doesn't feel any connection with me or doesn't feel that I support her. And then we get into bed and I'm like, hey, baby, like, you know that. I may want her to be more available that way, but I look at myself and say, what am I doing that contributes to that? And almost any time you want someone to change something in a relationship that you have with them, you can look at yourself and say, I'm doing something that's sabotaging that. I'm doing something that's keeping it going. And so we always need to start with ourselves. That's my little soapbox. But you,
I'm doing the same thing. That's the worst, is the things that irritate me about others are often the thing that I struggle with personally.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So
let me...
You had somewhere else you were going to go,
I'm going to take a left turn. We're going, we're getting off the highway, and we're going to get onto a very bumpy road. Are you ready for this one?
Oh, boy. Yeah. Bring it.
You're going to have to be emotionally prepared, so I'm warning you. But one of the things you do for families is you offer movie reviews.
Yes. Right? Yes, we do.
And what I actually think is cool, and John, that I've wanted to do that myself for a long time, because I am a movie fanatic. I love movies, and I've just never landed on how I would want to do that. That would be interesting to me. So here's what I'm going to make you do. You don't have to do it in a voice, so I'm gonna let you off the hook there. But I'm going to give you a movie, and you have to give me a one-word review. One word.
Okay.
And if you don't, I will shame you.
It's fun.
Like one of the characters from Austin Powers, the fat one.
Okay, so sounds good.
I'm going to give you a movie, and I got to get a one-word review from you. Are you ready for this?
Let's do it.
All right, first movie, The Exorcist.
Nope.
That was really good. I was thinking of my own words. I've never actually fully watched it. My brother tried to make me when I was a kid. I don't do scary movies. They're so messed up. All right, so that was like a terrifying
one.
Yeah.
You know, I love Halloween, and I enjoy some scary movies, but usually it has to be tempered with comedy. Yes. Or something along those lines. But I really like, there are a handful of scary movies that are meaningful that I love. Like this new movie, A Quiet Place, was excellent.
Oh, my wife and I, well, okay, so my 16-year-old son, David, and I took my wife on Sunday because we were so excited because she gets freaked out. But because I am a relationship expert, I knew if I get her into the backstory that they're married and that they did this movie together and she watched this really great interview on CBS Sunday Morning News, she was all in.
Well, the whole story is, what would you do to protect your kids?
Exactly.
You know, like that.
Which is wonderful.
John Krasinski, the director's like, I didn't even like scary movies until a year ago when I started doing research and got a taste for it. But I took interest in this because it's a story about family.
It totally
so go ahead.
Is.
So you take him.
Well, we went, and you know, the expectation is that my wife, there was a movie, I don't even remember what one it was, that we went to watch, and she got so terrified, she screamed bloody murder and ran out of the theater screaming. So our expectation was pretty high, and I can be honest and say that I actually I screamed more and louder in that quiet movie. It was humiliating because it really is quiet.
And it was like, who's that guy?
Yeah, and I'm like dropping some words I'm not supposed to, but they come out like Tourette's when I get scared, and it was not good. All right, so the first movie review was The Exorcist, and you gave it a big nope. Here's the next one, a little bit different. Mary Poppins, original.
I can't do this in one word because here's the phrase, shut up, Dad, I love it. back in the heyday of DVD buying, when DVDs were big, I bought Mary Poppins and my dad gave me crap. And I'm like, Dad, this is a classic. I was in my 20s.
Oh, and come on.
And I said, Dad, I bought The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. What do you want from me? It's Mary Poppins. It's Dick Van Dyke dancing the penguins. It's joy poured into a DVD. Why would I not want that?
It's
joy. There's the word, joy.
Yeah, joy. You got it. All right. You're going to notice I'm going to switch gears from movie to movie. The next one word, please. Deliverance.
Suey?
I thought I was going to get a song like ding, 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 ding. All right, Pete the Magic Dragon.
Can I say marijuana on the air? I don't know if this is it.
Man, it's a podcast.
Oh, that's Pump the Magic Dragon. You're thinking Pete's Dragon. They're two different things.
Pete's Dragon, but it was based off of the Disney thing. You're right. Pete's Dragon. The current one. I totally butchered it.
I'll stick I'll stick with hash as an answer, not as a lifestyle choice.
Yeah, that's smart. That's very smart. And all right, here's the last one. And I'm very curious on what your one word is going to be.
Okay.
Robin Hood, but the one with Kevin Costner.
Underrated.
Oh, you and I can be friends. I own it. I love it. It makes me happy.
Oh, my goodness. So quick 20-second tangent. For those who are listening and have never seen Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, many will poo-poo on that film and say Kevin Costner has an American accent and a mullet and that and try and put it on those grounds. First of all, mullets are amazing. Ask anybody in Arkansas or Alabama. And that's not a slam. That is an actual description of my friends who are rocking those things.
Yes.
This is set in medieval England. Modern British accents would be equally out of place with an American accent. So just go with it.
Throwing down.
Because Alan Rickman is rocking that thing. Oh, man. There's amazing action. The thing with the flaming arrow, the whole hanging scene where they're rescuing the merry men for being hanged is just one of the best staged action scenes in terms of building suspense. It's just the romance is excellent. Alan Rickman's a terrific villain. The music's underrated. Everything I do it for you. Dude. One of the all-time great love songs.
I mean, all-time great love song. I mean, that... You know, we could talk about sexual intimacy right now because you get that song playing for me. My wife knows. Things are going down. Things are happening soon.
You know, I did a Facebook poll on my Your Family Esther Facebook page a couple weeks ago about what would be good songs for a married lovemaking playlist, and I got such a variety of answers. I got stuff from Boys to Men to George Strait to Will Smith and Jazzy Jeff, "Boom Shake the Room," and I was like, "Nah, I'm not gonna. we're not gonna do that one." But I honestly think for me, it's gonna have to be. I don't know. I haven't tried this, and if my wife is listening. Sorry, I've never tried this with my wife. I don't know if it would do it for her, but for me, it would be like big band. It would be like Sinatra and Dean Martin.
Really?
And maybe not for the actual act of intimacy, but definitely for like the slow dance that leads, you know, as you're dancing your way towards the bedroom.
Well, my wife and I...
Certain incantations, you got Michael Bublé, Harry Connick Jr. It's just fantastic music.
That'll work, but, you know, this will give away my wife and I's age here a little bit. She'll probably kill me for even saying...
If you say Thunderstruck by AC/DC, I'm hanging up.
No. I could give you an entire genre, a decade of music, the 80s. Any song from the 80s is playing, she and I are all in. It just brings back fond memories.
I bet I could think of some 80s songs that would have the opposite effect, but
really?
I'll still go with it. Don't You Forget About Me, Hold Me Now. Those would be good ones. Definitely.
They do it. It takes you back to a time of innocence. And what's sad, though, is it gets our engines revving, but we didn't even know
each other.
I'm
sorry, the 80s were innocent? Did you follow Hairspray bands at all?
No. The 80s weren't innocent. My wife and I were innocent little people.
Oh, okay. Okay, absolutely. I'll go with that. I will allow it.
And so it's like we get to like relive our childhood, but having sex appropriately with a spouse.
Oh, you are my spirit animal.
Yes.
You know this? I love that we're talking freely about sex because in my business, I operate out of Utah. I'm from Arizona. Love Utah, great state, but the thing about some couples here is that they can have sex, but they just can't talk about it.
Yeah.
And so they're just not used to talking about it. And so I have to get that going. And sometimes I forget to shut that off. And so sometimes, and I'm not crass or crude, I just acknowledge that sex is a thing that people do, and every single one of us who is here on this earth is a result in some form or another.
Well, what's funny is I actually grew up in Arizona too. I wasn't born there.
Oh, nice.
I was born in Chicago, but I think we moved there when I was 8, and then I graduated high school from Arizona. And then I moved to Texas for Baylor University, and I met all these hung-up, Southern Baptist people that get so stressed. Like, I didn't know. I grew up in a home that was very healthy, and my mom talked about, you know, my mom and dad talked to me about sex, and I could ask questions, and I moved to the South, and I'm in the world? What is y'all's hang up over this? And so to solve that with my wife, who grew up here in Houston, Texas, we are starting actually next week. So your podcast is going to air today. Very exciting. Day that we record, it'll get released. But then next week, we're starting a new series called Tonight. Oh, yeah. I have got my wife talking about sex and a lot of it. Let me tell you.
Tonight. Are you going to whisper it every night, every time? Tonight.
Yes, it's tonight. And then I have a great tagline.
A new fragrance by Calvin Klein.
I'm trying to find my notes because I'm like, oh, here we go. It's called Tonight, an honest, overt, real conversation about how to experience the greatest sex of your life.
That is an octave away from Sizzler, right?
Yeah.
Right? That's a...
That's
cool. I will tune into that. I'm all about healthy sexuality. I think we have a problem in our culture with sex, and that problem is there's only two settings in terms of the cultural conversation, and that is raunchy and in your face, and the other setting is we just don't talk about it.
Yeah,
which is a real shame, because what there needs to be is a real open dialogue for healthy, loving sexuality between committed people.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we don't, it's just like, well, you know, I know somebody whose mother on their wedding day says, okay, so I think it's time for me to have a conversation with you. And the person says, Mom, I'm in my 20s. Like, that conversation should have been had a decade ago.
I've heard that so many times.
And so with my kids, we start them young, you know, with at a very young age, they know the proper terms for their anatomy, because they learn there's nothing shameful about their anatomy, and can backfire.
It does. I've had that. We did that with our kids, and one of my boys, he was like 3, just barely talking. He's like, Daddy, my penis hurts. It was like at church or something. And I was like, well, that's the correct word, son. Good job.
We taught our daughter to wipe herself, you know, after she peed, and she was 2, and, you know, wipe your vagina. So she goes, you know, wipe vagina. We're at Captain Underpants at the movie theater, and there's a scene where there's a giant roll of toilet paper. And when the giant roll of toilet paper shows up, the movie goes silent for a couple seconds, almost silent. And my little 2-year-old daughter in a full theater goes, ha, 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 the vagina. and I'm sitting there next to her, and everyone's looking at me like, what just happened? And who is this guy? And just the whole thing was, it's just a disaster.
Well, Jonathan, I have enjoyed this interview probably more than I have any other, but hopefully none of the people I've interviewed will hear this. But I really appreciate
Thank you, Michael.
I appreciate your humor. I appreciate what you're doing as the clinical director for yourfamilyexpert.com and what your wife and you get to do together and how you're helping others. So I encourage all my listeners to definitely check them out. And I'll give you the last word, Jonathan, but I just want you to close out one of the most epic relationship podcast interviews in the history of all mankind. I want you to close it out as potentially one of my favorite characters of all time, Smeagol.
Okay, well, I'm going to close that out with those immortal words of wisdom. Honestly, the best life advice outside of God, the best life advice I've ever heard comes from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. So I'm going to quote them as Smeagol. Be excellent to each other, and party on, dudes, party on. There you go.
That is so perfect. Hey, thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. Take care.